This is House Einstein Podcast 43, and I am Osman, your host with the House Einstein Podcast, and with me is Hamish. Welcome, Hamish.
Hello, Osman. It's good to be here. I'm Hamish, co-host? Co-host to the podcast. This one sure. Numbered 43.
Sure. All right. So in today's podcast, we're going to walk you through our mission as well as the actual content plan. Before I get started, we always have our usual disclaimer, and that is this podcast is entertainment. If you are a client, past or current client of our brokerage, the House Einstein Brokerage here in Boulder, Colorado, you are encouraged to reach out to us, reach out to your agent. You can find the list of agents at houseeinstein.com, and we will advise you specific to your unique real estate situation. But otherwise, our attorneys would prefer that you consider everything in this podcast to be entertainment, and it's absolutely not real estate advice or financial advice or spiritual advice or love advice in your life. So please
sometimes
don't
goes go, down that path.
Yeah, please don't go sue us for anything that's in this podcast. Our mission at House Einstein and in this podcast is to help you make a smarter real estate decision. That's what we do at House Einstein. That's what we're wired for. That's how we think. And hopefully you enjoy the entertainment of making smarter real estate decisions.
Believe it or not, it can be fun.
It is very fun. It's always fun. What we do is a lot of fun. And no kidding. It also feels good at the end of the day to have done good work and help people be smart about such large investment decisions. That's what drives me personally. It just feels good to be of value. And it also happens to be a successful business that I've now been in for 20 years. And prior to that was in the investment world and academically did stuff that was completely unrelated, but then ended up in finance as well. So was involved with biology and environmental science in undergrad and then got my MBA in finance and worked in the investment community for a while. But that's just a little bit of bio. So you have a sense of where we're coming from. And in this podcast, we're going to walk through market conditions. It is May 1st that we are recording this. We're going to talk about a couple of our listings and why these properties are unique and interesting and what we'll be doing with these listings as they are prepared for sale. We're going to talk about a couple of properties that we call sales of the week. These are properties that recently closed. We can talk about these because they're closed. The real estate community is very, very sensitive to talking about active listings, and there are all sorts of rules that prohibit realtors from talking about active listings. So if you're interested in what's actually happening with active listings or our thoughts on listings that are currently available, you can find that on our monthly newsletter. We don't talk about a lot of properties. Typically somewhere between 10 and 12 is our target for our fresh listings newsletter. It's a mix of fresh and sold properties, but that newsletter is a look behind the curtain, and it's intended for our prospective clients as well as our active clients, but typically prospective clients and past clients to enjoy that newsletter because it's an honest take about what's happening with active listings. We're going to talk about in the news. There's some really interesting stories, including a crackdown that's looming on Wall Street when it comes to treating real estate like an investment. Sorry, I was looking at the list, Hamish. You got something to add?
No, I was just kind of agreeing with you as you went through the list.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to talk about what was just announced, and that's the Fed's holding rates steady and the stock market reaction, but also what that might mean for the real estate market. We're going to talk a little bit about something called the North Sky Trail that is imminent and will be a lovely addition to Boulder County Trails and our trail system. And then there will be the final segment of the podcast, and that is a segment we call Tell Me Something I Don't Know. And the intention of that is to share things with you that might be useful to you as a buyer or seller of real estate, again, entertainment, but that unless you've been a market practitioner, unless you've been a professional in the real estate market and been tracking the market closely, you probably don't know what we'll be sharing with you in that segment. So that's it for this podcast. That's the table of contents.
Fantastic. Well, kind of jumping in to the next topic here, giving the segue a shot. Have you seen at all the Justin Timberlake meme this year? I haven't seen it once.
What? There's a meme?
Yeah, I know it comes around.
I've heard the name.
It comes around every late August or April, and it's Justin Timberlake, and it's just, you know, it's going to be May. No?
No.
Okay. Well, it is
May. I don't know. I don't know much. It is May. I do know who he is. He's a celebrity and a musician. I may have had one of his songs on my running my running playlist, but I think he dated Britney Spears. Is that right?
Yeah, he did.
I'm not really into celebrity stuff, so I don't really know much about that.
Either way, I missed him this year. But considering it's May, there's preliminary data.
Okay. Well, that's right. Yeah. That's the segue. There we go.
He's trying. I'm getting there.
Excuse me. I'll try not to cough into the microphone. I'm recovering from some sort of weird throat thing, cough thing. It's now been a couple of weeks, but I might mute it if I need to cough. All right, let's talk about market conditions. It is May 1st, and the MLS has released preliminary data, which I honestly do not trust preliminary data, because I know realtors are slow to update the MLS, and some brokerages won't pay agents until they close out the listing. So there is incentive for agents to get their act together, and they're supposed to update the MLS, I think, within 48 hours of a status change, or it might be 3 business days for certain things like a property going under contract. I know that for a fact, but on the closing side, I think it's supposed to be within 2 business days. Mm. But we're only on day one, so anything that closed this week in April, so anything that closed Monday or Tuesday, is likely not reflected in the data that is currently on the MLS. So think of this data as conservative, meaning that if sales seem low, well, there could be a few stragglers that bump that number up a little bit. Typically, it's the last week of the month, the last full week of the month, that sees the most activity. But it's quite possible we had a number of closings on Monday and Tuesday, which are going to change this data. So we may revisit it in the middle of the month. And you may see that in our newsletter as well, or you might see that on my Instagram. I like to look at the data after about a week, because I know the data is more reliable at that point. But people want to know what happened, and so preliminary data is worth sharing. And here we are. So let's focus on Boulder, as usual. We also, by the way, as a brokerage, do Denver. We cover all the way up to Fort Collins and into the mountain towns, but our bread and butter is Boulder County. And Broomfield to some extent too, but really mm-hmm. Boulder County. And then the city of Boulder is where I focus most of my business activity. And I really love the mountains and mountain towns, so we do talk about the mountains quite a bit as well. I like doing deals up in the mountains. All right, enough of that. So Boulder County. let's focus on detached countywide. So Boulder County includes Longmont, Lafayette, Lyons. All of that is in Boulder County. And the data says that there were 458 new single-family detached houses that hit the market in the month of April, and that is an increase year-over-year of 17%. So 17% more listings hit the market this year than April of last year. That is a pretty big jump. And then overall inventory, now this data point has been a little confusing, because during the peak of post-COVID activity in March of 2022, houses for sale basically flatlined, because things were moving so quickly that the data became completely inaccurate that summer. But I think we're back to accurate data. And the number of houses for sale, there were 581 single-family detached houses for sale in Boulder County last month, and that's an increase of 14.8% year-over-year. So also a pretty big increase. And then let's look at pending sales. So pending sales for the month, there were 301 house sales, single family houses are all we're talking about at the moment. We could also talk about attached. We could talk about all sorts of things, but we're going to focus on single family houses. 301 single family houses were in pending status last month. That's an increase of 13.2% year over year. So now you have both supply side and pending rising.
And pending's under contract, yeah?
Yeah, pending is under contract. Okay. Under contract and pending are the same thing. On the MLS, there are two levels of pending. Sometimes agents will mark a listing as active slash backup, which means they're looking for a backup offer, but they have a contract. And maybe the contract is shaky. Maybe it's early in the period. Maybe they're worried that the buyer's agent's going to try to extract value on negotiation. And so they want to have a backup for leverage in that negotiation. And they have it as listed as active slash backup. And pending is implies that, look, it's about to close. We think it's going to close. The contingencies are very limited. So there's no point in scheduling a showing. And there's no point in submitting a backup. We're not interested. But the combination of pending and active slash backup is in total under contract. That's what that means. And I guess I should add, first right of refusal technically should also be part of under contract, but first right of refusal as a category is there's usually like one house in the county. If you're ever thinking about offering somebody a first right, please don't. Like, really, all you're doing is screwing up the whole deal for the eventual buyer. Like, the odds of the first right person saying, you know what, I would like a first right of refusal. Can you give it to me? Well, the first, they usually don't want to pay for the option, right? Because that's what it is. But if they, that's a whole nother topic. But let's say you give it to them. I'm going to
make a note for that, actually.
Or you sold that first right. Well, what happens when it actually gets listed and you have a real buyer is now the buyer is waiting for this first person with a first right of refusal to make a decision in whatever time period has been granted. And either way, it's bad. Because if the person who has the first right decides to execute it on the first right, well, your agent has just done all this marketing for nothing when the first right of refusal person is going to buy it. And if the person that has that first right decides not to buy it, well, the person with the contract in place now is wondering all sorts of bad things. Like, are they overpaying? Is this property really that desirable? So basically, the net effect of first right of refusal is to dramatically decrease the attractiveness of the listing. But technically, it's under a contract. So think twice, sellers, before you do first right. And have a conversation with your agent about whether that makes any sense or not. And then let's talk about sales volume. So this is the number of closed sales, single-family houses in Boulder County. And that number was 283 last month. So that's an increase of almost 27%. That's a huge increase year over year.
Yeah,
that's a very large increase in closings. And one of the things that you will find in our data series on my Instagram is not just one month. We look at multiple months, and it's all charted out. In fact, I like to make my charts on an LTM basis, last 12 months, so you could see what's been happening. But that's not here in this podcast. You'll have to either find it on my Instagram, or if you are a prospective client that likes to actually make your decisions on data, not make-believe wishful thinking, call me, and we will put together a custom analysis specific to your unique situation. But if you're under a buyer agency with your agent, don't call me. Call your agent and fire them, then call me. I can't do anything for you if you're under a buyer agency with somebody else. So whether you're selling or buying, you really need to have clear ending of that contract before I can work with you.
And we did a very slight look into the data, your charts, the ones you're specifically mentioning last podcast as well. We threw them on screen. If you want to take a look, podcast 42.
But that's data through March, and we should have April data by, I don't know, April 10th, April 12th. You should see reliable April data. This isn't unreliable, but the data will get more accurate. Okay, let's talk about sale price. Sale price on a county basis sort of makes sense. And the median sale price last month was $898,000. That's up 5.7% year over year. I always like to see the same data on a dollar per square foot basis. That way you're kind of taking like out the them? House. Yeah, if there's been a big increase 2 or 3 months in a row, I also want to see a similar increase on dollar per square, because it's just more accurate as a reflection of what's really happening in the market. And dollar per square went up almost 13%. So 12.7% in Boulder County, the median. So, okay, very interesting to see. So when you look at that difference between sale price and dollar per square, the missing ingredient is house size. Because the larger the house, the lower the dollar per square. So if more larger homes suddenly sold in a month, you could see a lot of volatility in that data point.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Let's jump into City of Boulder because those are my people. I mean, Boulder County is too, but the city is really... it's not that I mind driving.
The city is my neighborhood. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, this is... I don't have to drive as far, okay, yeah, to do showings. I know every neighborhood. We've done every neighborhood in Boulder practically as a video series.
More in the works. And more in the works.
But like Boulder County, the city is just really, it's, you know, it's our fair city. So, all right, we'll leave it at that. Okay, data. New listings. There were 156 new house listings on the market last month. That's up 5.4% year over year. And the overall number of houses on the market, there are 269 available to buy. That's an increase of almost 27%, 26.9%.
Jeez.
More homes available to buy year over year. And then under contract, or i.e. pending sales, there were 82, only 82 in the city of Boulder. That's a decrease of almost 8% year over year. And then closed sales. So this is sales volume. Again, we're only talking about single family detached houses. There were 81 sales, which is an increase year over year of 21%. Boy, how's that for you? Under contract fell.
Right.
But closed sales increased. And the reason for that, Hamish, is because of the delay between pending and closings.
Gotcha.
Closings is what happened. It reflects what happened the previous month.
Yeah.
So closings reflect March's business activity. And under contract is what, in theory, is happening in the month of April. So it looks like the market cooled a bit when you have 8%, a drop in of 8% year over year. But the market in March was pretty frothy. Well, frothy is not the right word. Don't take that word to mean bubble. But there was 21% more sales. And I usually like to see 2 or 3 months, preferably 3 months of trend, 3 months of data before I declare a trend, especially in the city of Boulder. I mean, we're only talking about 81 sales.
Sample size, right?
It's a sample size issue. Mm. Yep. All right, sale price. Again, sample size issue, but here we are. 1.56 was the median sale in the city of Boulder, and that's an increase of 17.7%. Probably more of a reflection of more expensive homes selling than a reflection of changes in value. Like, it's not reflecting appreciation, especially on a monthly basis. But let's now look at dollar per square. Dollar per square dropped $529 per square, which is a decrease of 8.5%. So that, again, supports the idea that it was more larger, more expensive homes that sold last month, probably after a lot of price reductions, because the upper end of the market has seen a lot more competition for sellers, that meaning there's a lot more inventory and sellers have to work harder and be more aggressive on pricing. And we're going to talk more about that when we get to the Tell Me Something I Don't Know segment. We're going to talk about where there's opportunities and where there's a lot of risk in this market.
It's awful fantastic when the show notes kind of all link together with the market conditions.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe it's a little bookendy too, right? We're gonna tease that. Well, here's the data, but what does that mean for you? Like, where's the risk? Where's your opportunity? We're gonna make you wait for that conversation or that monologue, dialogue, that topic.
Yeah, yeah. But in the meantime, we have some exciting listings coming up to keep you entertained.
Yes. Meanwhile,
yeah,
as John Oliver would say. Meanwhile, oh no, that's Stephen Colbert, not John Oliver.
Yeah.
He has the whole meanwhile segment. So we've got some new listings that we're super excited about. One is a two-bedroom luxury condo that's very close to our office. I represented the buyer years ago, and it's time for them to move on. This property makes a lot of sense, particularly for young professionals or adults that aren't interested in living next to students, because the student density is super low at Uptown Broadway. It's much more young professionals, professionals in general, sometimes baby boomers that want a second home. I've sold some of those in Uptown as well. It's a great location, and the finishes are much higher quality. The construction quality is better, and you don't have a bunch of college kids partying next door, typically. I'm not saying that won't change, but that's the case right now. And then Wildwood. So Wildwood is a very interesting neighborhood that is just east of Wonderland Lake. And people don't usually call it Wildwood, often because people don't know that's the actual name of the neighborhood. But it's about 100 properties that I can't remember exactly when they were developed. We'll definitely be mentioning that in our listing video. But this is a really nice pocket of homes that are functional and livable. Typically, they are two-story houses, and there's some really pretty interwoven open space. And then you're literally right across the street from Wonderland Open Space, and you can access it from a tunnel, so you don't have to climb up onto Broadway. And you know, a lot of people initially look at this neighborhood and say things like, "Well, you know, the traffic noise from Broadway, it's really not a factor. Mm-hmm. It is because the whole neighborhood is lower than Broadway. You don't really hear the traffic noise." And that's one of those. I think it's an acoustic property. This is not my area of expertise. I'm just sharing subjectively that. That issue with traffic noise is not really a thing. And I think we will likely also do a Wildwood neighborhood video.
Took the words out of my mouth, yeah.
Yeah, let's do that as well, because this neighborhood deserves it. It's such a great location with equal proximity to all that stuff in Uptown Broadway and the Boulder Arts District, the North Boulder Arts District. And it's not that far from downtown either. So you can live a pretty easy car-free lifestyle. And you have access to both North and Downtown Boulder amenities and retail, and without all the very few college students, very safe location. And this particular unit, I can't wait to list it because it is so nice inside. It is like pardon this language, but there's so much garbage on the market. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pause for a second and let that sink in for a second.
Oh, he's got a cough.
I had a cough. There's so much garbage, and there has been so much garbage for so many years that sellers get away with selling things in Boulder that anywhere else in the country you would never see this sort of behavior, where literally they just throw a sign in the yard and don't do any work. That is not this unit. This unit is really nice, and for the entire 20 years of my working in real estate, with the exception of 2006 to 2007, that period where things were just insane and there was lots of selection, there was a lot of volume, a lot of supply. That's when you had a lot of choices. But since that time, it's been very difficult to find properties actually worth buying. And that's what I tell my clients. We're going to spend a lot of time not buying houses, and you're going to hear me try to dissuade you frequently.
I think we...
there's not a lot of...
I think last year we had some relocation clients, and I think the first house we took them on our showing was an example of a garbage house. We were like, just so you know, this is kind of how the market is here.
Okay. Well, it's not just so you know, it's you have to understand the cost to get a home in a turnkey condition, mm-hmm. to value it. And then you have to also understand the cost of your time and the rarity of that property, and then expect to be disappointed with what people are asking for homes that have not had that work. Mm-hmm. So there's a middle ground, and we increasingly are in that middle ground where we're advising our clients to make improvements so that it's more marketable. But it's frequent that sellers don't want to do anything, and you have to drag them kicking and screaming to do any work. But if they do the work, there's a premium in terms of list what it sells for. There's a premium in terms of how long the listing is on the market. It's very much worth doing some degree of work on almost every listing.
Absolutely. Yeah, we chatted about that. I think it was the last podcast. What are you paying for? That's the title of the podcast. We got into a little bit of the value of certain agents, yeah, and the expertise they can share.
I mean, I feel like the first showings should be prepare to be disappointed, which is sort of
it's almost
bummer,
a title.
Like, prepare to be disappointed because, or disappointment ahead, because the first trip out, you know, people are really excited and they're feeling very hopeful and positive, and I am too. But I know the reality is when we go to look at these houses, we're going to see a lot of homes that have not had the prep, or not just not had the prep, but have just been let go. Mm-hmm. And we talked about one of those homes in the newsletter. I can't disclose the address in this because it's an active listing, but the backstory on that home is that it was the original owner, and they did nothing. It's a museum to the 70s, and they didn't even address structural issues in the home. So good luck with that.
Yeah. Cool house.
Cool house.
And Good plug for the newsletter, houseeinstein.com, newsletter tab. We'll see you there.
Well, I mean, the key difference is we can talk about active listings, mm-hmm. and then we can't do that in this podcast. And I used to frame it up as just due diligence, right? Like, here's what you should focus on for due diligence. And now it's, I don't do as much language around due diligence. I've tried to simplify the newsletter a little bit. Anyway, let's keep moving on. So those are our listings coming up. We also have a fantastic home on the market on Alpine that's available now, 605 Alpine. That is really just waiting for the right buyer because it needs somebody that understands the value of south-facing orientation, the value of the privacy, and still being so close to North Boulder Park. Typically, you give up on the privacy in Newlands, and this home, you don't. And the tech upgrades are fantastic. The Tesla roof, not just the panels, but the roof and the wall.
Yep. The heat pump and the secret the shelter. Pump. But the that's shelter. That's a different topic. Yeah. Well,
would you buy a house with a secret bomb shelter?
Well, now it's not a secret, but still, yes. I 100% would. I'd want to see kind of what I could do with the space, but it wouldn't be a make or break, I don't think.
I kind of wouldn't want the city to know that it exists.
That would be it, yeah.
Are they going to bump up my taxes? Like, like if I like go in there and finish it, right? I go in there and put a ventilation system in and
make it habitable.
Make sure that there's no moisture down there and turn it into a man cave or person cave. They 100% would want to tax me on it. So I'd want to do it, you know, in a way that doesn't trigger the city. I'm not telling you to violate
underground, you know,
city rules. I'm not encouraging you to do things without a permit. Okay.
Okay.
At least not officially. Officially, we do everything. Anyway, let's stop.
Sales.
You ready for sale of the week?
Yeah,
so Hamish, you were actively involved with this week selection.
So I picked these out. I'm not so sure I did the best sleuthing on these. I think it's 198 East 2nd, which will be our second sale of the week that we cover in this segment, is the one that I think I had the most amount of excitement for. This first one, Osman, do you know much about it? Have you seen this floating around?
I'm just trying to find the cart closed on me.
Oh.
It's not under sale of the week.
I can send you the link for all the listings if you want real quick.
I just had all three of them. I just want to have them in front of me.
They're in GChat.
Okay. Well, what was the cart named?
It was podcast 43 and then the date that I...
podcast there. That's it. Okay, great. So you had the most... the one in Ned.
Mm-hmm. Should we start with that one?
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, I'm not looking at all the stats because we can only log into iRes one at a time here. But if memory serves correctly, it's got a...
For the record, Hamish, you never log into iRes.
This is
That's
correct.
That's because... There we go. Thank you.
Yeah. Never have, never will, unless it's my own account. Now, if I remember correctly from my own account in iRes... It was one day till sale, and I briefly glanced at the listing history and thought Osman could probably talk about this, but I don't really know what I'm looking at. A few of the major features for me for this one, it's a detached home in Nederland. It's from the map view on the maps, probably walking distance to Barker Reservoir, so really kind of a central downtown Nederland location, and it's very picturesque. It's super cute.
Have you mentioned the address?
Briefly, it's 198 East 2nd Street, Nederland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this one, I believe, was listed at $1 million and sold for $950.
That's right.
You confirm? Right. Yeah.
Well, okay. So, let me fill in a little bit of color on this property. It is very interesting because there are not that many homes in Ned, and after our Ned listing last year and spending a lot of time thinking about Ned and the market in Ned, this property fills a niche. It is right in the historic town of Nederland, and that means it's walking distance to restaurants and bars. You could walk down to the reservoir. Nederland is investing in the public spaces in... Is it a city? I think it's a town of Nederland.
Yeah.
when I first moved to Boulder that first summer, I used to go up to Ned and play at an open mic night right on First Street at a bar called the Wolf Tongue. This is right around the corner from that. It's no longer the Wolf Tongue. It's been a string of things since. I know the spot because it's just a great little in-town location. And this particular property was built right at the end of World War II in 1945. And it's a cute little, I don't know what to call it, cottage?
Yeah. Almost
cottage. It's a two-bedroom, two-bath. It's got almost 1,600 square feet, no garage, tiny lot. But it's the kind of property that you kind of have a vacation home in a market that's going to continue to aspenize. Mm-hmm. With the amount of resources that are going into hotels and other things in Ned, like it or not, and I'm not saying I do like it, by the way. I miss the old days of the Wolf Tongue. But this particular asset, at only $950, it looks like a screaming deal. But the listing history is also what's interesting, because the offer was made once the listing was expired. So they marketed it starting last summer.
That explains
at $995. Yep, that's what happened. So it hit the market last August, and it went under contract. And then buyer number one flaked for undisclosed reasons. And then buyer number two flaked. It went under contract again. It was only off the market for about 7 days. Somebody else jumped on it. And that person also backed out. And then nothing happened. In November, the seller and listing agent had the brilliant idea to increase the list price. And then 9 days later, the listing was withdrawn. And then it fully expired in February. So there was a period of November, December, so 3 months, basically, almost 3 months, when the property was off the market but not expired. And then it came back under contract. So first question I always ask is, wait, hold on. Did the agent that listed it So somebody did double end on this deal. So I'm not going to mention this agent's name. But the same agent listed it and represented the buyer, and the buy side commission was disclosed at 2.8. Likely the sell side was 3.2, probably a full 6% deal. And the previous listing, so let's go look at that really quick, and I will pull it up, and you probably won't be able to see it. It's the same agent. So the same listing agent. She did not get fired. She just had it in withdrawn status, and it wasn't mentioned why it was withdrawn. There were all caps in the listing: do not contact sellers, temporarily withdrawn, will be relisted in the spring. But in between that time period, somebody approached them and saw it and wrote an offer. It was not disclosed what happened. The SPD, seller's property disclosure, was not online. So why did two buyers walk away from this? And buyer number three was the lucky one, and they got it for 50,000. Oh, sorry. Yeah. What did they get it for? 50,000 below list? So they got it for a decent discount. But they had to obviously deal with the risk of, well, two buyers walked away. Why did they walk away? Did the seller fix what was wrong? But if it was actually buttoned up and the photos make it look that way, I think this was a great buy at $950.
The photos show some fantastic finishes, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, for a little mountain cottage, right? Like, not fantastic for an $8 million home, but fantastic for a little mountain cottage. And you can see that there's a futon that folds out for more bedroom space, more bed space. Like, this is a cool little place. You live in Boulder, you live in Denver, or even not even locally. You buzz in and stay in this place. Of course, the dream of Airbnb money is pretty much over. So don't ever think that you're going to have that happen for you in Nederland. You need a permit. You need a license. And those licenses have a waiting list and are decreasingly available. The city does not like, the town of Nederland does not like.
It's being cracked down on.
Yeah. So forget that idea. And neighbors will even turn you in if you're trying to run an illegal Airbnb. So it's not a good investment thesis to run an Airbnb. But what a great little second home for friends and family to gather and enjoy Ned, because you're right at Eldora. You've got stuff happening in Ned year-round, and it just keeps getting better downtown. Although less quirky and charming, and that's what I mean by how I like the old Wolf Tongue days, where it was a hippie town, Hamish.
Yeah. I don't know where it was. It wasn't Netherland. I went up into the mountains with a friend, and we ended up, I think it was like an hour out of cell phone service, at this bar, and there was like square dancing and a bunch of very, I want to say like traditional festivities going on and everything, and everybody I've talked to since then about that is like, oh, that's what Ned was like, and Ned was a lot more, I guess, intimate and close.
I was told that half the town moves into the woods in the summertime and doesn't want, because they don't want to pay rent. And I was surprised to find that there was some truth to that. And when I was, there were a couple of takeaways from those weeks I did open mic nights. It was sort of fall and winter. But talking to the locals, they verified that a lot of them now live in yurts in the national forest, hidden away, not paying rent or taxes, and
living off the land.
And that open mic night would bring people out, right? We'd all hang out for a few hours, and people would kind of rotate through and perform. And I'll never forget this one night that this guy wanted to borrow my pickup, which is a device that sits in your guitar and plugs into the amplifier. Mm. And I was like, sure, but how do I know I'm ever going to get back? And he's like, how about I give you this bag of weed, and you can hold it as collateral? This is way before weed was legal. And I'm like, I'm okay.
I'm not that guy. You. Yeah.
Just give the pickup to the bartender, and I'll pick it up next week. And he did. But the whole bag of weed he pulled out, I'll never forget. I'm like, wow, this is a very interesting
Let me give you a felony as collateral.
Right. Let me give you a no thank you. No, at the time, I was a little more law and order oriented.
Technically, still are. The law and order has changed.
I still am, but I wouldn't. Yeah. I still wouldn't take a bag of weed as collateral. I'd be like, can you just PayPal me $100 and I'll give it back to you when I get my pickup back?
I mean, we could speculate all day long, right, on why the first two under contracts disappeared. Do we want to hit any level of kind of possibilities or due diligence, or is it kind of just speculation, really?
Well, so the first thing that happens to humans when they see that a property was already under contract once is they immediately want to know what's wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And the answer could be nothing was wrong with it. The answer could be that the first buyer had a bail for unknown reasons. Their financing didn't work out. They got cold feet. I've had clients that were under contract and then got into a fight and almost got divorced over it. I've had clients that were supposedly serious buyers and in a serious relationship, but after the second day of showings, one of the two called me and said, look, we just broke up.
Oh my God.
He's not ready to buy a house with me.
Holy cow.
And I was like, okay, like there was clearly some hardcore nesting behavior going on by one of them, and the other person was getting dragged along and didn't really want to seal the deal, so to speak. So you never know. It could totally be the buyers that were wrong. But you should always ask for a copy of the termination notice. Mm. And the right time to do that is probably after you're under contract. And that way you can verify exactly what happened. And it's possible that whatever was wrong was fixed. Mold is an increasing issue in Colorado because of it's gotten wetter and people have gotten more sensitive. And so mold can usually be fixed. But if it did have a mold issue, you kind of want to get to the bottom of it and see, all right, has it been addressed? And sometimes you can get a really good deal, mm-hmm. or you can get the seller to pay for it, as we just did this week.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I mean, so the house came back with some elevated mold results, but then the seller retested. This is a different deal. I can't talk about what property we're talking about because it's under contract. But then they brought the first inspector back, and he got no results on mold. And then the mold company said $1,700 to mitigate, and they wanted to credit our client, and our client and I agreed that that's a horrible idea because if it doesn't fix the issue, well, guess what? You just got the $1,700, but you also inherited the risk. Mm-hmm. So that should be a seller risk.
Yeah. All right. Okie dokie. We have more.
Ready for the next one?
Yeah. This is yours to tee up now.
Okay. You want me to tee it up?
Yeah. And I'm curious which one you'll pick.
Well, let's talk about 470 Utica first. Hmm. This is a $4.1 million deal. It just closed a few days ago. The house was built in 2008, has 5,200 square feet, two-car attached garage, five bedrooms, five bathrooms, a conventional floor plan with most of the bedrooms on the upper level and one in the basement. And after 20 years, I can tell you that that floor plan with most of the bedrooms on the upper level, one in the basement, maybe an office on the main, or sometimes the main is the primary is on the main, but it needs to have most of the bedrooms on the upper. That's what buyers tend to prefer. Mm. This particular house is in the north side of Wonderland Lake and sitting on a pretty generous lot, a 10,000 square foot lot. And that's, I don't know, probably 30 or 40% bigger than your typical lot in Boulder. Most lots are around 7,000-ish square feet. It also backs to open space. So the backyard should give you great views, but also some security risk because there's a trail right there that goes by your property. Unlikely that people are, you know, diving through the bushes to go throw themselves over your fence, but it's possible. The views
People stray.
Well, people sometimes stray. Yeah. The views were described as jaw-dropping, and the home was built to feature those views because it's from the upper level. And this is sort of what some people – this is – I don't know if it's fully upside down, but when you have the kitchen –
kitchen's it's not on, fully like, the main, down. Right?
It's on the main, but the main is elevated in this home, right? The whole kitchen area and living area and entertaining areas are all elevated to feature these views. And you may want to flip through the photos so you can see really what a home designed to feature views look like.
And it does it does it well. Yeah.
It does it well. It also does it even from the upper level. You can see the windows and the atrium, I would call it, right? That dining living room area with the super vaulted ceilings. It's not really an atrium, but it has that feel. All those views and all those windows that maximize the value of those views. So if you happen to own a property that backs to views like this, this is a great example for what you can do to renovate, remodel, maybe do an addition. I mean, this home is just spectacular in its execution of that. The walkout basement even has views.
Yeah.
Backyard is professionally landscaped. All the photos show a really nicely taken care of home. Some staging, not complete staging. There's some empty rooms. That's fine. There's enough for a buyer to walk through and get a sense of how they might live there. And it's been depersonalized, which is exactly what you want when you prep a home for sale. You don't want buyers distracted by your
family
photos or your religious art or your college degrees. All that
stuff. They love college degrees. Buyers love to see your college degrees.
Unless you really want to show off your college degree. But you think about what impact it might have on a buyer. Maybe they're the same college degree and they love it. Or maybe they never got to college or they were rejected from medical school and now they're upset with you because you got one. Like they have a, you know, subconscious resentment.
Yeah.
But in any event, look at those south-facing views. They are spectacular. Whew. This is a gorgeous house. All right. With all of that said, it didn't fly off the market, Hamish.
No.
It was available for more than 3 weeks. And the reason we're going to talk about in the last segment, tell me something I don't know. We'll go into detail there. But the buyer paid 4.1, which is a pretty decent discount, to the list price. They paid cash.
What's the list price?
And the list price was 4.3.
Oh, yeah.
It sold for 4.1. So do the math. Click, 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 click. You're looking at 4.7% below list. So straight up the fairway. In fact, a little bit, I would say, even less than I would have expected on a negotiated discount for a listing that had been on the market 3 weeks. It's a decent deal.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not say they didn't steal the house. And at the same time, the seller got a lot of value. I mean, $787 a square. This was a good deal for, I think, all involved. And those views are unlikely to ever be impeded.
Yeah, that green space there, huh?
And the interior could be redesigned. And still, the intelligence of featuring those views. And it's a home that works for so many. I mean, 5,200 square feet, five bedrooms. That's plenty of space. Two-car garage.
Yeah.
Like, this is a home run of a house.
Yeah. Now, EIFS or stucco, what do you think?
probably Ephes, given it's 2008, and Ephes shouldn't really scare people to death. We're not in a super moisture-rich climate, but when you put a house under contract that has Ephes, or if you're listing a house that has Ephes, you should get an Ephes inspection and make sure the home is properly maintained and caulked and all those good things.
Just be aware of it, right?
You should just be aware of it, be prepared for it. I don't know if it actually was Ephes or if it was legit stucco. People don't really do legit stucco anymore unless it's like a historic house. Mm-hmm. So it's more likely to be Ephes. But you can't tell just by looking at it. You can sort of tell by knocking on it with your knuckles because Ephes has kind of a hollowy sound because it's foam you're knocking on.
Right.
But really the only way to tell is to actually test the material in a way, in a place that is
not noticeable, right?
Yeah, right. Like you take a little core sample and see if a whole bunch of foam comes out, and if it does, you got Ephes, and you stick a caulk gun in there and seal it. That's what they do.
Okay. And if you are knocking on it, it's kind of rough. Don't punch it.
Yeah, don't punch it. And if there are signs of moisture intrusion on Ephes, do not think it's casual and no big deal. Because not only does that foam board have to come down and be redone, there's a really good chance that moisture was trapped in the wall. And now you've got rotten boards and maybe mold, but you potentially could be redoing structure. So I've negotiated six figures just on chimneys that were wrapped in Ephes that were failing.
Dang. Well, then we've gone into Ephes so many times, I don't need to even link the office debacle to it. But yeah, Ephes, investigate that stuff. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the last sale of the week. And now we don't normally do three, but you chose three, Hamish. So if anybody's upset with the fact that why is this podcast going so long?
I'm trying to keep it to the 90-minute standard.
The new 90-minute standard. So this property is 54 South 68th Street. Hold on, did I mention the address of the last one? I
think so. Right at the start, yeah. Do you want to close it out?
470 Utica. Okay. Well, now we're moving on. 54 South 68th Street. And this property was originally listed in August of last year. Actually, so strike that. It was originally listed in May of last year, so a year ago, at $2.5 million. And then there's a really weird pattern that occurred that was never explained of the property being pulled off the market and then put back on and pulled off and put back on the same day. Active withdrawn. I don't know what – I have no idea why somebody would do that. So it originally listed at $2.5 million. And then in early June, they dropped it to 2.4. Excuse me.
Bless you.
There was a parallel listing. So this is one of those things where I don't understand what's going on with the MLS when you have two identical properties. But the bottom line is in June, they dropped it to 2.4. And it sat there in this weird pattern of active withdrawn, until September. And then beginning in September, it was totally off the market. And then it was brought back on this March, and it was available for a whole 2 days before somebody locked it down. And this is a story of, oops, we overpriced it last summer. Actually, late spring, the timing, they just may have been caught in the downdraft of the market, because we saw that with a lot of listings that priced high in the spring and then had to chase the market down. That's not an uncommon pattern, and that's sort of what happened. But then they pulled it off entirely, you know, right before October and didn't bring it back till March. Now, of course, our first question, did the agent get fired? The first agent, which happens, right? I'm not trying to dig on this person, but we see who the first agent is. I'm not going to mention their name. And now let's go look at, see if this agent did retain it. You know, it's difficult because when you've been on the market for a long time and you're frustrated, there's a temptation to fire your agent. They didn't. They kept the agent. Somebody came in and scooped it up. So it sold for 2.3, which is actually 5,000 more than the list price when it came back. There were no disclosed concessions, sold in the normal conventional fixed rate mortgage. So the house itself is about 3,000 square feet. It's a one-story ranch, four bedrooms on, it says upper, and one on the main, which is confusing because it's listed as a one-story ranch.
Yeah, I'm looking at the floor plans now. There is an upper level.
Yeah, so how is it a ranch, one-story house with an upper level? That's a mystery. It looks kind of like the main was up there. But now I see multiple houses. I mean, I think this is just a listing mistake. Mm-hmm. It's clearly not a one-story house.
I'm checking on
Scooby. Right? I mean, see stairs. Stories. Right?
Yeah.
You also see great views through the windows. You also see really nice finishes inside. And the house itself is in a pretty nice spot in sort of a rural location. So you head down South Boulder Road. We were just there looking at the Lodestar Ranch, which is not that far from this property. This is just west of Spanish Hills. And before you're into Boulder proper, we have a client who's building in this location. It's a great spot, no doubt. And this house faces south. And it's a very nice property. It's unclear what happened with the weird listing history. But the photos show a very tidy property. There's some nice finish choices. The post and beam is cool, although probably fake, but it's cool. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a little close to South Boulder Road. You might get some traffic noise. Like, if you have the budget and the wherewithal, you're better off buying further to the south so you have less impact of the road. But you can't go too far because then you run into US 36. And the impact from that. So, you know, it's a really nice property. I don't know what else to say about it, Hamish. It's 3,000 square feet is a nice size. It's got a 3-car garage. It works for a lot of buyers. And it was totally overlooked last fall. And this spring, boom, it's gone.
Yeah. No, I guess my only thing would be it's a little close to South Boulder for me. But, I mean, it wouldn't end the deal for me. I'd just be curious kind of how loud it is. But South Boulder tends to be fairly quiet too. I've driven on it probably 3 times this year and it's always been relatively empty. Yeah.
Well, the other thing to think about is fire resilience. Mm. This is right in the middle of the Marshall Fire. I think this house had a claim for smoke. And, you know, I see a lot of wood. I see vegetation close to the structure. And that is one of the advantages of purchasing a home that's been rebuilt. There's some downside risk too, but one of the advantages is it's a structure that's hardened. In theory, if they were smart about how they built it, I mean, I'm standing at one of the houses myself.
Yeah.
Right. This house I'm in has hardy board siding and a metal roof, and that reduces its likelihood of burning. Everything will eventually burn if you have a wildfire barreling down at 100 miles an hour. But
otherwise,
this sold for 2.3, which, you know, pretty decent value on this house. I think it's mostly about how turnkey it is. Mm-hmm.
Super.
That's something buyers are willing to pay a premium for.
Yeah. And the marketing standpoint, I'm clicking through the photos endlessly looking for like a front of the house picture, but there isn't one. And I think it just makes sense that there isn't because of the huge tree in front of it. All street view, you know, and I can get a glimpse of it, but the landscaping around it is so flush and mature. It's really kind of nestled in its own lot there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, these are the things you start noticing when you've been doing this business for a while. You're like, why is there no front photo?
Yeah.
And it could be that it's an ugly house. It could also be that if you popped up the drone and looked at the front, well, you would see nothing. You would see a bunch of farmland.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the highway, and the views are all to the south. So they decided to not use a front photo at all, which, yeah, that is unusual.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if that's... it took me a second to realize why I was clicking continuously through the photos, and I was like, oh, that's what I'm looking for, is the house. But, it's a neat one. It's interesting that it was snapped up so quickly this cycle around.
Well, this is one of the reasons why in the fourth quarter we really encourage our clients that are thinking about buying next year to go through the withdrawn and expired listings.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get there before the rest of the market, you might get a deal. You may not have to have paid $5,000 more. You might have paid $100 less if you had written your offer in January.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting until they came back at 2.3, and guess what? There probably were more than one buyer interested because the spring is so much more active. The fall, the fourth quarter is dead. So if you came in and end of fourth quarter and said, well, it looks like you pulled this off in September, I'd like to see it. Can I get a showing? They were still interested in selling it. And they waited till the market came back.
I gotta wonder if that withdrawn active cycle is them trying to, you know, get it to pop up on people's search alerts. But it does it so much that it doesn't seem that's the case. Maybe renovations, who knows?
I mean, this deserves a screenshot, Hamish. I'm just going to do it right now. I don't know if I can. I'll just...
A little print screen?
I'll just save it and then email it to you afterward. It's just astounding. One, two, three times they played the let's pull it off and put it back game. And then they did the let's do another listing at the same time game, both on the MLS, which is a violation of a different kind. So I don't really understand what the heck is going on with this listing history. Other than it screams agent, I mean, I don't want to throw agents under the bus, but I don't understand what she's doing.
Yeah. Okay. News.
It doesn't broadcast competence. Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. So those are our sales of the week. Now it's time to talk about the news.
Yes. Do you want to?
What's happening in the news
here? Yeah. Okay. I'll bring in the first one. Wall Street's right. Home buying crackdown. And let me read the Wall Street has spent billions buying homes. A crackdown is looming. Lawmakers say investors that scooped up hundreds of thousands of houses to rent out are driving up home prices. By Will Parker. And
in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. Now I've hit the paywall. You take the rest of it.
Ah, you done it. Okay. All right. I could gift you articles, Hamish.
You can.
So this has been a thing. It is well known that iBuyers really were scooping the market and being really aggressive in certain metros. We didn't see a ton of that in the city of Boulder. We did see some of it in Denver.
What's the...
And now...
The Open Door or something was the company that...
Yeah. Yeah. Open Door. Zillow itself was in the iBuyer game for a while. A bunch of... there were a lot of losses also associated with iBuyers. But it's not just these websites... There's private equity firms that got into the game, mm-hmm. too. And there's a reason, right? Rates were really low at the time. And real estate is an asset that doesn't go out of style. People need a place to live, at least residential, right? But that's a fundamental human need, a place to live, a place to hang your hat.
Yep.
And the mental model that the vast majority of Americans have is not a tall apartment building. It's a lovely home with a picket fence and a yard where their dog can play and their kids, if they choose to have them, can grow up. That's what people want.
Yeah.
And it's hard to build more of it. So this is not rocket science. And with rates so low, locking it in and you now have basically a nice steady cash flow. And as long as the properties are well maintained, it's been a fantastic investment for a lot of individuals as well as companies. So it's... What's happening is that because prices have gotten so high and affordability has gotten so challenging, well, there's political pressure to restrict investors from buying houses. And it might happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to keep an eye on.
And there's I guess you jumped into it too. There's like the iBuyers, and then there's like Wall Street investors, and then there's your mom and pop investors. I mean, investors is a huge catch-all statement, right? And so there's a lot of this kind of like pent up frustration and anger out there, and it's been out there. So directing that, I guess, to where it's going to be most effective or productive is really important. You see a lot of misinformed, angry posts about, you know, your mom and pop or something of that kind. And even then, I've seen a lot of stats where it's like this is either like a really small percentage of the total housing share, but then it also boils down to neighborhood, right? Because it's real estate. So it's a can of worms. Yeah.
Well, three of those states that the article mentions, Nebraska, California, New York, Minnesota, and North Carolina, are primarily Democratic states.
Mm.
And I think that they're pushing for this is frankly a political move. Because right now, this is not an issue. Rates are so high that nothing is cash flowing. Nothing mm-hmm. makes sense for investors to jump into. So why is this happening now? I think this is happening now because of politics.
Mm.
And this is an attempt to get buy votes, to get votes.
Yeah, versus like the pandemic, well, when everything was on sale.
And at the same time, right, I think it probably makes sense that large corporate investors are in some ways kept from residential housing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, not everyone wants to buy. There are lots of people that prefer to rent because they have liquidity and flexibility. Mm-hmm. They're not 100% committed to buying. And unfortunately, a lot of people that could have bought 5 years ago no longer can. So they're stuck in the rental market. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that these companies that own all, especially in the cities that have high percentages, they're not going to dump their inventory if the investment is cash flowing and a good return. So this is, I think, mostly just politics. This is mostly just optics. Maybe it'll have an impact in the next when rates drop. I mean,
we hear about this rhetoric so much, right? This doesn't feel like the first article that I've read about the same exact subject.
Right. Yeah.
It's like high-speed rail.
So we'll see. I haven't... Well, that's a whole other topic. High-speed rail, especially high-speed rail in any rail in Colorado is a whole other... Like, all right, so let's segue from there.
Shall we?
To the big news article of the day.
Yes.
And that is that the Fed
is
going to hold rates steady.
Man,
today was the Fed announcement. They had their meeting, and the Federal Open Market Committee. They had their Jerome Powell got on his pulpit and said inflation's too high, but we're not about to cut rates, and we're not about to raise rates either. So my understanding is traders are now pricing in maybe one cut this year, but inflation has not come down. So now rates are at 20. So the 10-year treasury is, I think, at 20-year highs. And something is going to break here. We're starting to see it, I think, in certain markets, not Boulder, not the city of Boulder, but we're starting to see some retrenchment. Mm-hmm. Of markets that are rate sensitive. Boulder is not really rate sensitive. There's so much demand at every price point. But inventory is starting to pile up at certain price points. So that's something I want to talk about in our last segment.
It's been teased so well, and we're getting there. Eventually. So
this is a really big deal. Look, every one of our buyers that has a mortgage has cried about the rate and cried about the monthly payment. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, those monthly payments are likely going to be going down in 3 or 4 years, but they're not going down in the next 6 to 12 months, right? When they refi. When these people refi, they will go down. But when are rates going to drop? I who knows? But the market, the stock market had a nice field day today on this news that that the Fed's just going to hold rates steady. So it sounds like no increase for now. Maybe a decrease in the second half of the year. And the market does like stability, does like predictability when it comes to interest rates. And the Fed controls the ultimate benchmark for interest rates throughout the world.
Pretty in line with, I think it was our last podcast, where we were mentioning that, you know, this may be our new normal, at least for a little while. This may be our new low interest rates, you know. When you consider,
if you're a buyer or a seller, this is really important if you're in a rate-sensitive market. The high end has a whole different issue. Mm-hmm. People aren't rate-sensitive, but they aren't immune either. They understand rates, probably to a much higher level. But there's a certain segment of the market, I would say the majority of America is, we used to call it buying a monthly payment, right? Like that's what they care about, is their monthly payment. That's payment, what they're fixated on. That's right. Shop the payment, date the rate. I don't know exactly what that means, Hamish. You'll have to explain it to me.
Some agent on Instagram, I think I saw them say it.
Sounds very catchy.
Yeah, sounds easier than it is.
You're not really marry. Oh, it's like marry the house, date the rate.
Yeah.
Like that's what really matters, is getting the right house and making sure your monthly payment's affordable if you're a buyer that's sensitive to monthly payments. But you should expect that payment to probably be going down in the long run, because we're at 20-year highs for mortgage rates. So, so if you're selling, this is really, really vital. You need to understand the rate sensitivity of your market. And we've done marketing that offered to buy down rates, and we've had buyers take it up with the seller saying, absolutely, please buy down my rate, even if they didn't need it. So be careful marketing that, because you may or may not be in a rate sensitive segment of the market.
Good point.
And one way you can tell is get a sense of how many other listings are offering rate buy downs. But it's not really a relevant yeah, above a certain price point, it's totally irrelevant.
Another soundbite that I have on the top of mind is buy when rates are high, sell when rates are low. But I don't think that's investment advice.
I mean, I think it's an interesting... So look, if you have a lot of selection, you should use that selection to leverage a better deal. Mm-hmm. But if you're searching around like we are with our client tomorrow, I'm taking him out to go look at a bunch of houses, and the segment he's looking in for his particular needs, we're now selling two or three of these a year, and it's really hard to find a house worth buying. And these are homes with main floor, primary bedrooms. These are homes that are larger than your typical South Boulder ranch, so probably 1,600 and up square feet. Preferably about 3,000 would be the Goldilocks size, and all one level. Mm-hmm. That house is really hard to find.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like anything you say in real estate, you can accompany probably 5 or 6 asterisks and then have a bunch of footnotes at the bottom of it. Yeah.
Let's hit our last news story. It's about the North Sky Trail.
Yes.
So at the north end of Boulder, Dakota Ridge, there was a trail, and that trail just connected to Boulder Valley Ranch in the past. And what they've been working on, and that is expected to be completed this year, is a trail that parallels US 36 on the west side of the highway and then connects to Joder Ranch. And the Joder Ranch trail can then take you up to Old Stage. Mm-hmm. So this could be a nice little loop for gravel bikes, mountain bikes. I'm not sure how difficult the trail will be. Odds are they're going to make it less technical and a nice easy trail, but we'll find out. It's a really interesting trail. There's been so much carnage on US 36 as well. People getting hit on bicycles. So anything that takes us off US 36 and creates routes for people is very, very welcome. It increases accessibility to open space for Dakota Ridge as well as all of North Boulder. It's a fantastic trail, and I can't wait to ride it.
Yeah, I think you hit all the high points. That's just a little local piece that I think we're both excited for. I just got a bike, so I'm looking at kind of exploring a lot of the recreation that I get to film and see and talk about on the House on the Stone podcast and in our videos, and I'm like, I get to actually participate. So Ian briefly covered this in his mountain biking in Boulder video on YouTube. So if you want a little bit more color and just on the trails in Boulder too, good little video. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. All right. I think that's it for the news. Let's talk about our last segment.
Yes.
Tell me something I don't know. And I think this is relevant. It's not going to be a long segment, but this week I was asked the question of why aren't you an investment advisor? Why you clearly have worked in that space. Why'd you leave? And I realized that I never really talk about that.
Yeah.
At least not publicly. And maybe it's worth talking about. So I worked in the investment world both on Wall Street on the buy side of equities and telecom, doing research for an investment bank. I also worked for an investment firm in Boston and worked for an economics firm in Boston and then worked for an investment / real estate developer / brokerage on Nantucket. That's how I got involved in real estate, was that experience on Nantucket. And I realized a couple of things. One, real estate on the residential side is really underserved by people that have analytical chops and a perspective on due diligence and fiduciary responsibility and negotiation skills, unlike the investment world that's chock full of people like that. Mm-hmm. But the residential real estate, for some reason, is just sitting out there without a lot of support. And at the time, anyway, it was very well protected from an income perspective. So the commission structure in residential real estate was unimpeachable for decades until recently, where it's become more competitive. So those two factors made it very attractive. But really, it wasn't about the opportunity and the income. It was about getting out of the office. Mm. It was about not sitting in a cube and staring at a screen and moving numbers around a big giant financial model and watching what was happening on a minute-by-minute basis with the markets.
Jeez.
And dealing with the intensity of institutional investors and also our own trading floor, where at the end of the day, all these hours spent working, and you'd go home and you're like, I have nothing to show for it. It felt like I'm living in a sort of artificial reality in a cube and staring at a screen all day long.
Kind of like your, yeah.
And the pain of that was just so vivid. Unlike residential real estate, where getting out meant that you're actually touching the assets. You're actually looking at things in the real world and you're interacting with real humans.
Yeah, that's the big one.
On a fundamental, it's so human. I mean, it's you work with people one-on-one on a major life decision, and often intersects with marriage or a divorce or a family member dying or household formation. People are getting married. People are starting a new job. Mm-hmm. A chapter is opening and a chapter is closing in their lives. And so there's a human element to what we do that just was never present in the investment community. Not like this. And I like the people I worked with, don't get me wrong, but this is like you're actually adding a lot of value when you bring the skill set to play
right.
with residential real estate.
Yeah, I just have to second it. So is that why you're not an investment advisor? Or?
I mean, sometimes I regret not working in the investment world. The money is much, much better, but the culture can be all over the place. Mm-hmm. The investment company I worked for in Denver had amazing culture. The firm that's now defunct in New York did not. I thought that culture in that firm was very broken, and I will share those stories only in person. And likely after a few cocktails, because I really had a hard time with the ethics and the perspective on other humans, the sort of sense of entitlement and arrogance, especially in New York City. It wasn't so bad in Boston. It was still not great, but it wasn't so bad when I worked in Boston. It was pretty much non-existent on Nantucket, but that wasn't really a traditional investment firm, the way I think of investment firms.
Right.
When I did work for a firm here in Denver, the large family office, and I'll name them. They're still here. Republic Financial. I really loved working for that company. And the founder's values were really imbued across the culture. And I really appreciated the analytical rigor and also the question of ethics that would come into play on all their decisions. I really enjoyed that company. It changed my whole perspective on the investment world. But it's too late. I've been doing this 20 years. So unless you want to go start an investment firm, Hamish, which maybe we will, but what we do is help people buy and sell houses and help them be smart about it. But there you go. That's what you may not know.
And it's very satisfying. Yeah.
It is deeply satisfying. The humans are so nice to connect with and work with.
You say as lizards.
Look, I'm telling you, it's the people. Yeah. It's so nice. And it's selective. It's self-selective. Like the people that knock on our door and want to work with us, they listen to the podcast, they know who we are, they share our values, they're up to good things in their world. They're just good. I mean, look, you got our humans
so great.
Across the board. Yeah. Right, okay. Well, I don't want to get into the Hobbesian or people intrinsically evil or intrinsically good, but I know that I really love our clients and appreciate their trust in us.
Yeah. No, I think the reward in this position, it's genuinely a service, and being able to provide it and to the level that we do and as competently as we do is extremely rewarding. Now, this is the topic we've been teasing since the podcast began. Osman, where is there opportunity in the market?
Okay, let's do it. Yep. Where is there opportunity? And this is the thumbnail. It's going to be market meltdown, and the meltdown is happening above 3 million. So we talked about this at the last podcast, that there's only 12 or 13% of homes above 3 million under contract. We're now seeing a lot of sellers capitulate on pricing, cut their pricing more aggressively. And if you are a buyer in the $3+ million category anywhere on the Front Range, you have leverage. It doesn't mean every property is open to that. There may be a unicorn on the market that is irreplaceable. Right, like the Lodestar Ranch property on 50+ acres of land. The price point we discuss in the newsletter, but that other than price, which I'm not going to go any further, that asset itself is really unique. So if that's the one, that's the one. You're dealing with a marketplace of one seller with their perspective on what the value is. But if you're looking generally between say 3 and 5, you have way more opportunity and leverage. The ability to walk away and say, you know, there's probably going to be a better house or at least another house if I don't get the price I want or I don't get the house I want. And that is unlike almost any other segment in the market. But if you kind of slice it up, right? Like if you take that $3 to $4 million range and say, all right, well, of that $3 to $4 million, what percentage in that tranche are actually worth buying? What percentage are updated in good locations? You're going to see a pretty high percentage compared to under 3 million. Under 3 million, I would say you're probably looking at 1 in 10 houses.
And you're talking like 2.5 to 3 buying. Or?
You know, it's not that granular. Or so black and white. 3 is a good... Well, so the reason I'm saying that, Hamish, is because there's this concept in economics called price elasticity. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is, like, let's say, we'll talk about cars, okay? Mm-hmm. If you're a car buyer and you want, like, you're shopping for a Toyota Corolla, odds are you are a buyer that doesn't have a lot of flexibility in your price mm-hmm. range, right? You're probably looking for something between $30,000 and $40,000, maybe $25,000 and $30,000. And it's very monthly payment driven, and you've got a narrow range of price. That's a buyer, or that's an inelastic segment. But if you're actually looking at, like, a 7 Series BMW or an S-Class Mercedes, you could probably buy anything from $50,000 to $125,000. Mm-hmm. So your range or elasticity is so much bigger. And that's the same thing that happens in real estate, that a buyer that can afford a $3 million house can probably afford a $3.5 million house, but would also look at $2 million houses. But a buyer that's capping out at 2 has a very narrow slice that they're willing to consider.
Right.
So your competition when you are listing above 3 is actually a lot higher than 3.
Right. I see.
But your competition, if you're listing at 1.5 to 2, is very narrow. Those buyers are probably not looking at $3 and $4 million houses at the same time. Mm-hmm. So understanding that segmentation is really important, both for buyers and sellers. And therefore, what you asked this question, 2.5 to 3, it's probably irrelevant. The 2.5 to 3, but 3 is clearly a shift in the market. You see it across the board that above 3, buyers have more leverage, sellers need to be more prepared, homes need to be prepped properly and priced right, but really prepped properly is even more important than priced mm-hmm. right. I think that you could be a little bit wrong on price, but if you've staged it, photographed it right, addressed all the deficiencies in the property, you know, done the marketing that we do with all of our listings, like, you really have knocked it out of the park in your marketing, mm-hmm. and you should sell. But the price issue, you can afford to be a little bit
incorrect,
wrong.
Yeah.
But you cannot afford to be a little bit wrong. I'm sorry, I'm getting confused. Hang on a second. Above 3, you've got a lot more competition as a seller. Yeah. Under 3, you have a lot less competition. You have a lot more buyers in the market for the same segment of house.
Right.
So, so price is important at all levels, but you're prepping a home above 3. That particular buyer is not just about price. So this is the nuance that you really need to understand. But if you are a buyer above 3, the one thing to keep in mind is you have leverage, you have options, and you should be ready to walk away if the house isn't mm-hmm. right.
Are we hitting below 3?
We can. We can do it at any price point.
But yeah.
Right? So, I mean, if we were to look, that's a good point. Okay, so let's look in the city of Boulder. I'm going to do this live. This is how long it takes. Okay? Detached houses, let's call it 1 to 2 million. Well, let's call it 1 to 1.5. Because remember, the slices are narrower mm-hmm. in the lower price points. And if you look at how many houses are on the market right now, Coming Soon or active, there's a total of 56. All right, of those 56, how many are under contract? Sorry, that's just Coming Soon or active. The total number, I apologize, is 82. Okay. So there's 82 houses on the market. Of those 82, what percentage are under contract? 26. So 26 over 82. So you're looking at 31%. 32%, 31.7% in that narrow tranche. And there's enough data points there to say that's probably realistic, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about 50 plus houses. And when you do it, let's do 3 to 4 or 3 to 5 even. Because now we're talking about a broader slice.
Right.
Because remember, these buyers have more elasticity, or the market is more elastic. The total number of homes on the market, 62. So not a completely dissimilar number. I mean, if we dropped it to 4.5, we probably would bounce right on the same number. Mm. At 4.5, we've got 49. So that's even closer. So let's call it 3 to 4.5 to get the same number of homes available. And in that price segment, 3 to 4.5, you have a total of 5 houses under contract. So let's do 5 out of 49, 10%. So you could argue, and the data shows this, that that market segment of 1 to 1.5 has 3 times the percentage of homes under contract, which tells you the depth of market, the number of buyers in there trying to find a house. So if you're selling in the 3 to 4.5, you really better have it right.
Right.
And yes, price is important, but you better have it right with staging. You better have it right with photography, videography, fix all the deficiencies, landscaping, views. It's like you're trying to get a date and all of the competitors on the dance floor are models, right? Mm-hmm. You better be really, really attractive.
Find a good surgeon.
Right. Well, I'm not going to describe what's attractive, Hamish. All I said is you better be really attractive. But if you're in the 1 to 1.5, well, at least 30% of the people are getting dates, mm-hmm. right? Versus only 10% of the people. There's 90% of the people bouncing around on that dance floor can't find a partner.
Yeah. And that's it's the Utica home versus what was the other home we mentioned? Just bringing it back, I guess, kind of bookending it, 54 South to 68th Street, right? Though it's kind of moot because both homes were on for quite a while, and one was a withdrawal active. But
well, I mean, what we do with our buyers is we go look at what else they could have bought. Mm-hmm. But if you did that with Utica, what else could you buy in that price range? I would bet 90% of the homes are not as attractive.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a reason they went for that one.
Right. So checking the competition, all those things.
Wow. Just don't go in blind. Buying or selling, look to the facts. Don't believe the hype of private networks and all the nonsense that all these other brokerages offer. It comes down to what options buyers and sellers have, what the competition looks like, and you have to look at it all the time. In fact, we are coming up on a call, Hamish, mm-hmm. with our clients this afternoon to do exactly that, to go through the market and talk about what the competition looks like, what's happened in the last week, how many homes went under contract, are prices moving down? They are. That's important to talk about.
Yeah. So
every week. Okay. All right. That's enough. That's stuff you probably didn't know. And benchmarking every week is really important. So we'll leave it at that. And I think it's time to wrap it up, Hamish. What do you say?
I think you're probably right. We're nearing the 90 minutes. And though I say it in jest, I really didn't intend for this to be more than an hour. Here we are. If you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out our newsletter. We posted or released, mailed, smoke signaled a newsletter just yesterday. Really well written. Osman knocked it out of the park on all the homes we covered. And some of the market details went a little bit more in depth there too. You'll find that on our website at houseeinstein.com, the newsletter tab. We also have socials. If you're listening to this and we are faceless, check out our YouTube. We have all these podcasts with our beautiful mugs on them, as well as our listing videos, neighborhood tours, all sorts of content on there for you to make a smarter real estate decision. If YouTube isn't your jam, check us out on Instagram or X. Osman's kind of got the X platform down. He's a great Z-er or tweeter.
No, I do not have the X platform.
I think
down.
You do pretty well. You've got the tone, at least. Like, it matches everybody else's tweets that I see. So check him out, Osman Parvez on Twitter. Check out House Einstein, really, wherever you social media, we're there. Thank you so much for joining. And we very much like seeing your comments and your likes and interacting with you guys. So keep that up.
And if anything is confusing about what I shared, particularly around price ranges, price elasticity, just remember what matters is the market relative to your specific real estate situation, buying or selling. And we're here for you as long as you're not already working with another agent. Call me.
Yeah.
Or call another agent on the team. We all are cut from the same cloth, and our mission is to help you be smart about your real estate decision. You won't get a lot of sales talk. You'll get a lot of facts and advice that's grounded in the facts of the market, not on a bunch of wishful thinking.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Take care.
We'll catch you next time.